Hi, friends, and welcome to Bayou de Beltway. I'm your host, Pearson Cross. Thanks for joining us. Today, we are going to be talking to Carly Amlabar, who is president and CEO of United Way of Acadiana. Ms. Amlabar was born in Chicago, raised in Knoxville, where she attended high school, went to college at Northwestern in Evanston. She worked for Teach for America, which brought her to Louisiana all the way to Church Point. Loving the area, she decided not to leave, decided to make a life here. In the meanwhile, she was working in generally the nonprofit government sector. She picked up a master's in public administration at LSU and then came very close in a race for mayor-president of Lafayette Parish, coming in second out of five in the field that eventually elected Mr. Mayor-President Josh Guillory. She is currently serving as president and CEO of United Way of Acadiana. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning to you as well. So I'm talking to you, and I'm thinking we're all grappling with the changes that this year has brought, and certainly I would imagine that United Way has its hands full under the best of possible circumstances, but this has been a pretty crazy year with hurricanes and with the COVID pandemic and the resulting economic fallout. So what's been the challenges or the new challenges that you've faced at United Way in terms of dealing with just about everything that's going on?
Right. Well, I think that the COVID pandemic changed the way that we think about disaster. So United Way of Acadiana has always been involved in disaster response. But if 2020, one of the things 2020 taught us is that here we think of disaster as flooding and hurricanes, and we're ready to respond to that, and we're ready to provide relief, and we're ready to get water to people, and we're ready to get supplies and invest in, helping folks rebuild and collecting donations. I think that what COVID taught us is that, or reminded us, I should say, is that disaster comes in different shapes and sizes. And so, COVID for us has been a long-term economic disaster. And so, I think that what it caused us to do sort of in the immediate aftermath, and I guess aftermath is maybe not the right word to even use because the disaster is still happening. But we, reflected on what our role is in disaster, and it's to help people in need. And the need from COVID is economic largely. And so it's really, caused us, kind of as a unifying entity in the nonprofit sector, we found ourselves in 2020 involved in a lot of food relief because that was a way that we could mobilize volunteers to help people in need. That was, we had agencies that had food, but we needed ways to get it to people. We had volunteers willing to help. And so for us, the primary way that we've responded to COVID has been to mobilize food relief in a bunch of different ways. And we can talk about that. Working with partners who were already in the space like Second Harvest, but then just supplementing what they were able to do. Because, the big need with seeing such an increase in unemployment and an increase in people in need was that there are just a lot more people out there who are struggling to meet their basic needs. And, we'll probably talk about this as we go on into the program, but the United Way for years has focused on the ALICE population. And, ALICE is an acronym for Asset Limited, Income Constrained, but Employed. So, people who have a job, but are limited in their asset and they're really one disaster away from really struggling. And for many people, COVID was that disaster. And so, one of people's basic needs is food. And so, we've mobilized, hundreds of volunteers this year to feed thousands of people and deliver hundreds of thousands of meals and food staples to people.
It certainly sounds like an enormous task. There are a couple of things here I wanted to follow up on. So in terms of United Way as an organization, obviously you can't really prepare for a hurricane and those things. Right. Some seasons we're very fortunate, and other seasons like this one we're not so fortunate. But did at some point in terms of your management team at United Way, did you start to think, oh, this is what COVID's going to do? and we're going to have to mobilize. Did you have some team meetings based around that in terms of trying to figure out the appropriate response?
You know, it was different than that, I would say, and I would credit, you know, the work of, you know, the Acadian of OAD. So Acadian of OAD is Volunteer Organizations Active in Disasters, you know, and that's a national organization that is coalitions of folks in different parts, you know, the way different communities respond to disaster. And our VOAD mobilized, you know, the day that the governor closed the schools, our VOAD here mobilized and began meeting really regularly and began talking about what the emerging needs were. And so that group was meeting daily for probably a couple of months and staying on top of the needs. And there are several folks at United Way who were participating in that. And so then, you know, but one informed the other, I guess, is what I'm saying. And so there were conversations with United Way staff, but it was also kind of looking at it from a systems level, like where are the holes and where are the ways that we can plug those holes.
Now, that's one of the things about United Way is that your organization has quite a coordinating role. So did you find yourself trying to lead that coordinating role, or through VOAD, was that a joint partnership or something? Was there a special role for United Way in terms of response?
So typically, you know, VOAD right now, the president is a woman named Melinda Taylor, who you're probably familiar with, who runs our local Habitat. And she's, you know, I can't say enough good things about her leadership throughout this, because you know, disaster response is not necessarily in Habitat's top of their core mission, but they understand the importance of housing stability and the importance of working with the agencies that are in VOAD. And so Melinda's done a great job kind of leading the troops. And typically United Way in disaster response assists in donation coordination and volunteer mobilization. And so we certainly played that role. In particular, I think, you know, the volunteer response has been, you know, has been critical. And we have mobilized hundreds of volunteers to serve people in COVID and help with that need. So, you know, I do think that United Way plays somewhat of a leadership role, as do many others that are active participants in VOAD. And Melinda in particular, I think, deserves a shout out for her steady hands throughout all of 2020.
Let's talk about volunteers for a little bit. So has there been an outpouring of volunteerism during the COVID crisis? And how is the fact that it's a crisis brought on by a pandemic shaped that or changed that from, say, a volunteer response in a hurricane?
Yeah, so it's been an evolution, I would say. And it's been, you know, you had at the beginning a lot of folks who were longtime volunteers across all the different agencies. We would hear this, especially, you know, one of the big groups of volunteers is folks who are retired. And, you know, but those were often, you know, folks that were older and folks that were a little bit more, had reason to be a little bit more nervous about COVID, or more at risk, I should say. And so, you know, we had, I think, a lot of changing in who the volunteer face was because of COVID, because a lot of agencies who rely on volunteers for their work kind of needed to check in with the people who regularly volunteered for them to make sure it was still safe, and then in many cases had to go out and recruit new volunteers. So some of the work that we did in United Way's response with the, you know, we've stood up a program that we started in April where we are getting referrals from Volunteers of America and 232 Help for folks who are COVID positive or immunocompromised, and we are delivering food to their homes. And we've done that entirely with volunteers. And so those folks, that was kind of a new program, I guess you could say, and a new need that developed because of COVID. And so we kind of recruited volunteers to assist with that. And some of them had volunteered with us in the past, but because it wasn't a longstanding program, generally speaking, the people who volunteered themselves or participated were people who, were ready to take on COVID protocols in order to volunteer. So they were willing to wear a mask. They were willing to, you know, and we set up a contactless delivery system and everything else. But I know it's been a big shift for many agencies in having to find new volunteers or people who were not at the high risk of getting COVID, and so were able to continue to help. So it's been an interesting year in that I think we've seen a lot of volunteer mobilization, but also a lot of turnover in who our volunteers could be. And so there's been a need, to kind of reach out to new places. I know we've had a lot of folks with help with, different people that have affiliations with the university or other groups that need volunteer hours. But then also there's been many people who volunteer through companies or institutions, that have had to be really careful with how they encourage volunteerism during this time.
Yeah, it seems like you would need to almost look for new areas to recruit people in. I mean, certainly people have time on their hands. Many
right.
people do. They're
right.
they're more in charge of their own schedules and so on. But we typically think of volunteers as, high school, college age kids, so to speak, mm-hmm. and not to denigrate their contribution, but then people who are perhaps at the end of their working life, they're more moving into retirement, they have lots of extra time. But those are the people, that are, of course, at risk most from this pandemic.
Right.
So it's a little different than, say, reaching out at a hurricane or doing some other kinds of things, or just the day-to-day kind of keep the community chugging along volunteerism. You have to be very careful. So I imagine that's could that possibly be one of the long-term effects of COVID that we're not the epidemic that we're not really envisioning at this point, and that is a change in the structure of volunteerism?
I think so. And, we had a couple of things come together this year that made it, I guess, in some ways easier, although I'll credit my staff who's worked really hard to engage and mobilize volunteers. So I think they make it look easy sometimes. But we also, pre-COVID, had been working on a partnership with Parish Proud. Parish Proud, of course, is the beautification organization that was launched, I believe, in 2019, supported in no small part by Matt Stoller, but also has widespread community engagement about to beautify our community. And so we had been working with them and were able to launch this summer a virtual volunteer center. And I should back up to say that United Way, within United Way, has housed our region's volunteer center since the 90s. And that was a program that was started, I believe, by the Junior League and then merged with United Way in the 90s. And so we've housed and encouraged volunteerism from within the doors of United Way across all our agencies for a long time. That's a big part of our history. What Parish Proud did was they provided the infrastructure to basically take that volunteer center and take that work and put it in a digital space. So now we have a digital platform that allows agencies from across Acadiana to register and create profiles and create their own volunteer opportunities, as well as ours. And when I say ours, I mean, all of the things that United Way recruits volunteers for. And obviously during 2020, that's primarily been pandemic relief activities or hurricane relief activities. And so that I encourage people to go check that out. It's unitedwayofacadiana.org/volunteer. And it's a great opportunity for organizations to put, their institution, their organization online, and then register volunteer opportunities, and gives them access to, regular access, not only to their own volunteers, but potentially to other community volunteers. And then from United Way's perspective, we believe that a strong volunteer effort in your community, and volunteerism is one of the ways that we improve the lives and the entire community. And so it was a logical fit for us. And of course, Parish Proud was very generous to help make that possible for our community. And so that's a really long way of answering your question, which is, I think that there was a chance that volunteerism was already going to change in our community because of that ability to go digital and to have access and understanding with more opportunities. And then the pandemic just made it so that we were immediately using this new software, and it kind of helped us mobilize it and get it going really quickly. And so that's been, you know, one of the things that you can say is, you know, one of the bittersweet things of 2020 is we really have been able to mobilize hundreds of people and quickly deploy a software that has a lot of really positive capabilities for volunteer engagement in our community.
Well, I certainly look forward to checking out that software. If you happen to just tune in, we are talking with United Way CEO and President Ms. Carly Amlabar about the challenges for United Way, for our region, and for care organizations in Acadiana. We're so happy that you're here. Let me ask, normally you partner with a number of organizations, you know, in the areas of food security, literacy, education, hurricane preparedness, you know, there's quite a list. What are these organizations telling you? Are you kind of a broker for the messages that you're getting? Are they reporting back to you that there are specific challenges? Anything to report there?
I think the biggest challenge that we see on the horizon is, and the biggest uncertainty too, is housing and housing stability, in particular with the increases we've seen in unemployment and the uncertainty that with, you know, the eviction moratorium and you know, when folks who have not been able to pay their rent or have not been able to keep up with their utilities, you know, we've already seen an increase in homelessness in Acadiana, you know, right within the first few months of the pandemic. And, you know, Arch, who we work with very closely in BOAD, has really ramped up their operations and has been housing people in hotels and now is working to rehouse them as quickly as possible. But we're still seeing levels of homelessness in Acadiana that we haven't seen before. And so I think that looking into 2021, I think that's the thing that we're hearing the most on the ground is the challenges related to, providing as much stability in the housing area as possible. And, you know, I referenced earlier our work with the ALICE population, and certainly stable housing is an indicator to a lot of other success factors in life. You know, if you can, and you know, there's a lot more, I think Blue Cross this year has done a great job to bring a lot more light to the social determinants of health through their foundation work. And, you know, I expect we'll just keep hearing more and more of that as time goes on, kind of one of the legacy impacts of COVID. And, you know, all of that research points to the importance of stable housing as a, you know, kind of a predetermining factor of outcomes. And so I think that really is the number one thing we're hearing from community partners. I think the other thing that we're hearing is the mental health aspects, of course. You know, 2020 has been a difficult year, whether folks have suffered a direct loss or just, you know, are struggling with depression issues from being in their homes for 9 months of the year with, you know, an unclear end in sight. And so, you know, I think that's another challenge that we're hearing on the ground and that we'll certainly be trying to support through our work, both in our grant making and our partnership.
One of the things about this crisis, of course, and you raise a whole bunch of interesting points, and I want to talk about ALICE here in just a second, But certainly in terms of mental health, you know, COVID, hurricanes come and go. You know, they come in and they do damage, even if it's a lot of damage like Laura, and people are left struggling with some of those issues, housing and issues with food and water and some of those things. Oftentimes those are wrapped up in a more expeditious fashion, whereas COVID just seems to go on and on and on. So that really provides maybe a ground for mental health issues to come to the fore as people get worn down. We've already seen people are like, okay, I'm over COVID now. But as we know, COVID's not over with us, right?
Right.
Okay, well, let's talk about Alice just a little bit. You know, the Alice report, Asset Limited, Income Constrained, Employed, talks about how people are making it. I think if I remember the figures offhand about, and it's a sort of a way to measure other than the federal poverty line, which is a really outdated and antiquated measure of prosperity or something, that's Alice is seen as much more active and much more apt in capturing what people are experiencing. So it strikes me that nearly 50% or slightly more than 50% of residents in Louisiana are in fact over what they call are covered under Alice. Would you talk about that just a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, and you started to go there. I think that in the Acadiana region, I think we're just, depending on the parish that you're in, we're either just under or just over 50% that are at the Alice level or the federal poverty when you combine those two. So the Alice level is kind of the next quartile up if you think about it that way. And I think that the one of the big drivers, I think, of trying to capture that group of folks is, you know, trying to help people understand, you know, a lot of the people that United Way serves through the programs that we operate or we fund, you know, are working extraordinarily hard and are really just one disaster away from slipping into that poverty level. And so, for instance, you know, you have a family who's, you know, may have both parents working, but working, you know, minimum wage jobs or working multiple jobs. And, you know, if they have a health setback, for instance, you know, and all of a sudden one of the parents can't work, all of a sudden they are at that, you know, poverty level. And I think it was in, you know, when the folks, and I wasn't with United Way when this report was conceived, but, you know, for, I think I can speak personally to what it means to me. It's really an attempt to kind of provide a framework to how many people in our community are insecure in some way with kind of their future, or one disaster away from having a very insecure future. Because we all know things like illnesses and car accidents and, you know, a tree falling on your house. Like, those types of things happen every day in our community. And so then if you think about, like, okay, that really common thing, that car accident that I might see, you know, one a week on the road, like half of our population is really at risk if something like that happens to them. And so, you know, I think it was intended to kind of help us realize how many people we may know and how many people we may work with, we may go to church with, we may, you know, see in the grocery store, are, you know, they might be okay to pay that grocery bill today, but if they go home tomorrow and their spouse is sick, and all of a sudden their life becomes a lot less secure. And, you know, we've seen in our work, we've seen that being able to talk about Alice and people can relate to Alice, because often they do work with someone who fits that category, or they do go to church with people who fit that, you know, category. And it's made our work a lot more understandable to people. And, you know, the reality is, you know, when we're half of our community or close to half of our community is that fragile, that just, you know, that makes it helps build, I think, compassion for people, and it helps us think about how we create success systems that are successful for larger parts of the population.
Yeah, one of the things the Alice Report points out is that just being poor by federal poverty standards, they're of course quite poor, and we all understand that. The current federal poverty standard for a family of four is about $24,000. But in fact, you need considerably more than that, most people would think, to actually function in our society, to have a car, to have health care, to have right. adequate food on the table, you know, just the, you know, thinking about the things that we take for granted generally. And that's very problematic for many people right now. We're getting closer to the end of our show. Is there any evidence so far about how the ALICE categories are changing as a result of the present crisis? I think intuitively we think it's probably making those categories larger. People are plunging into long-term unemployment and so on. Have you got any feedback with regard to that?
We released, and when I say we, I mean the Louisiana Association of United Ways, which, you know, our United Way is a member and participates with, released an updated ALICE report earlier this summer. And there was a small piece in there about, you know, the impact of COVID and, you know, generally kind of saying what you just said, that the risks are greater and there's the chance, or there's more people falling into this risk category as a result of COVID. And so I think that, you know, we're really looking at, you know, what that means. We United Way will release our, you know, we do an annual grant cycle right now, and we'll release that grant application in January, and it'll be due in February. And so we're having a lot of those conversations right now about, you know, what might be different, or how the needs are going to evolve. And I'm sure, you know, our partner agencies will share some of that with us, but, you know, we may see, you know, just a really different expression of needs and solutions based on what's happening out there in the community. And I think we can, you know, and that is, you know, when we, you know, of course, like the folks that 2020 has been a long year or 2020 was a long year for a lot of us. And I think that, you know, one of the things that I have tried to kind of say to the folks, whether it's on my staff or working with the VOAD folks, is that, you know, we can expect our jobs to be more difficult for a little while because there's going to be more people who need our services. And this, from the nonprofit sector and the social service sector side, you know, we're, and from the Acadiana region, we're probably going to have more people in need than we've really seen in our lifetime.
I think that's right. We have pretty much reached the end of our show. Quickly, if you could just say what the if you want to volunteer or give help, where would people go?
UnitedWayOfAcadiana.org. And if you want to volunteer, it's /volunteer. If you want to donate to our efforts, it's /donate. And we really, you know, we want the support and engagement of everyone in the community, because, you know, we believe that working together, we're going to solve many of these problems. And we know there's a lot of generous people in Acadiana who want to help.
Well, I'm sure that's true. We've been talking today, and thank you for joining us, Ms. Carly Amlablar, CEO and President of United Way. Thanks for joining the show.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bayou to Beltway is copyrighted by KRVS for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without written consent of KRVS is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of KRVS, its officers, or members. To listen to a podcast of the interview we just heard, go to krvs.org.
This program was made possible in part by contributions to KRVS Public Radio from listeners like you.
You're listening to KRVS 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles, and on the web at krvs.org. Find us on Facebook at KRVS Public Media.